Welcome to 2026. It's live from Olympia with the 7th Legislative District State Senator Shelley Short and Representatives Andrew Engel and Hunter A. Bell on Okanagan Country Radio. I'm your host, Tracy Ellis, with the Washington State Senate Republican Caucus. You can email me with your questions. It's tracy.ellis@leg.wa.gov. That's tracy.ellis@leg.wa.gov, or call 509-826-0100. That's 509-826-0100. Well, it's been several months since we talked to the legislators, and so I thought we'd reintroduce them all to you, starting with Senator Short. Hello, Senator Short.
Hello, I'm Shelley Short, and I live in Addy. Serve on the committees I serve on are Ag and Natural Resources. I'm the ranking Republican, the lead Republican, Energy, Environment, and Technology, and the Rules Committee. Last year, I served on two at the same time. That was a little interesting. And that was state government, and where all of the elections bills go. It was a really interesting committee, but I'm happy that I don't have to do two at the same time this year.
Representative Engel?
Yeah, this is Andrew Engel. I live in Colville, center of Stevens County, and serve on agriculture, natural resources, healthcare and wellness, housing, and this year I just got added to the Transportation Committee.
Well, that should be fine. Transportation. Hunter Abel, Representative Hunter Abel.
Yeah, good morning, Tracy. Good morning, everyone. This is Hunter Abel. I live in Inchilliam on the Colville Reservation in Ferry County. I serve on four committees. I serve as the assistant ranking member on the Civil Rights and Judiciary Committee. I also serve on the Environment and Energy Committee, the Finance Committee, which is the Tax Committee, and then lastly, the Rules Committee.
I should note that all three legislators here encourage you to reach out to their offices. If you have any questions, concerns regarding state government at all, really, reach out to the office. Their legislative assistants are all in the room with us as well. They will get back to you. I can guarantee it. These three legislators are very, very much want to be in tune with you back home. They realize that's who they're serving. You know what? There's a kind of a nice story coming out of the House of Representatives. The national anthem is being sung by a celebrity this opening session.
That's right. Certainly very much a local celebrity in my house. This is Hunter. Really proud dad moment here. So my oldest daughter, Libby, is 12 years old. She's been taking voice lessons for a number of years. And she came to opening session last session, and she was really just intrigued with the beauty of the House chamber and kind of the pomp and circumstance of the opening ceremonies. And she kind of tucked that away in her young mind, and over the summer said, "Hey, Daddy, do you think I could sing the national anthem when we open?" I said, "I don't know, but I will ask." And, you know, we don't see eye to eye with, you know, the speaker, you know, the majority party there in the chamber, but there is a tradition of bipartisanship on things involving families. And so I was really honored when the speaker extended a personal invitation to my daughter, Libby, to sing the national anthem this morning. So, you know, prayers for this little girl. She's a little nervous this morning. She's getting ready here and, you know, I guess 4 hours to sing the national anthem in front of, you know, the entire House chamber and whoever's watching TVW. So at noon today on TVW, you know, you can see my daughter sing the national anthem.
For the opening ceremony, that's actually a pretty nice honor. That's great. That's awesome.
Yeah, pretty excited about it.
Well, there is a lot of crazy. I shouldn't say crazy. There's a lot of stuff going on this.
You can say crazy.
This legislative session. But, you know, we should start by talking about just maybe highlight one of your bills each. And I just, for whatever reason, I'm interested in Representative Engel's bill about warranties for license plates. And I thought, you know, why would we need a warranty for a license plate? But there is a good reason for it.
Yes, there is. And my guess is a lot of our listeners have had this issue where the paint, or the cover coating peels off the license plate. We call it delamination. And this came to me last summer when a constituent called who'd been pulled over for having the paint peeling off her license plate. And she went in to replace it. It was told to be $77.25. And she called me and she's like, "This thing's 3 years old. It used to last forever. I feel like there should be some sort of a warranty on these license plates." And I thought it was an intriguing idea. So I set up a meeting with the Department of Licensing, find out it costs $6.76 for a set of license plates, and they mark it up to $77.25. And I'm like, you know what, that's undermining trust in our system of government when we are selling defective products that require people to have and then we require them to pay full price to replace them. I put it on Facebook, got hundreds of comments, and I find this is a very common issue. And so I'm excited it's got a hearing on Thursday, so hopefully a few people can submit their comments and help move the bill along.
I thought it was important to highlight this bill because this is an example of how it works, folks. You know, a constituent comes to a legislator says, yeah, that's an important issue, files a bill, hopefully it gets hearings. It just for those who don't know how the process works and they didn't get a chance to see I'm just a bill when they were kids like I did a million times, the bill, after the legislator files the bill, it goes through hearings and then it has to pass its chamber. So in this case, Representative Engel, it has to pass the House. And after it passes the House, it comes over the Senate and it goes through the same process. It goes through committee meetings, has to pass the Senate, and then the governor has to sign it for it to become law. That is how it works. Senator Short, do you have any bills that you want to see become law?
Absolutely. One that I think if you're a homeowner, rancher, farmer, and you have land or your operation is next to water, which obviously water is a key ingredient in what we do with our crops, you have probably been visited by ecology at some point, or you hope you never do. But what we're seeing more often than ever before is them using strong arm tactics. You know, there might be a cow that's too close to a creek or might be in the creek or whatever the case may be. They have very broad authority to start harassing that landowner and to really make it hard for that landowner to use the land that they pay for. And so this bill actually, the language that's a favorite of ecology uses what I call the potential to pollute. So it's not that they have to base any specific hardcore data on what you're doing to influence water quality. They can just say, well, there's a potential there. Well, my bill would actually take that language out of statute. Now, look, we all want water quality. We want it to be good, but I also want it to be based on factual information, not the word potential. This is our land, the land that we purchase, the land we pay taxes on, the land that we use to, you know, to have our homes, to raise crops and everything. And we have a state agency that just can come in and say, well, we think you're doing something. And so you're regulated. And I know that's a long description. I'm passionate about this. We've watched it year after year after year. And it's increasingly worse. And it has me concerned.
It's like giving you a ticket for potentially speeding, not saying you speed, Senator Short, although Senator Warnock has said that you, anyway.
Thank you. Oh, goodness.
But, you know, it's an interesting law or I guess it's probably an agency rule that allows you to cite someone for the potential of pollution, not for actual pollution.
Right. Yeah. And they are doubling down on this. We've seen it all across our district. And I think, again, when we come to our constitutional protections, having the word potential in state law just really undermines the right to our private property.
Representative Abel, what do you got cooking over there?
Yeah, I've got a bill that in a way kind of exemplifies another way that bills come to our attention. So Andrew talked about a bill idea that came to him through a constituent. I've picked up and started running on a bill that has been kicked around for a number of years here in Olympia, and I believe actually Senator Short, maybe some of our 7th District predecessors worked on this. This is the Family Burial Ground Bill, and what it does is it would allow owners of private property to designate a small portion of their property as a family burial ground. And really the issue and the challenge here is that for especially a lot of our folks who live in really rural areas and live on a ranch or a farm, if they had the choice, they would really rather be buried at the ranch or the farm there rather than out in town, which in some cases can be, you know, half an hour away, 45 minutes away. And so this is a bill that has passed both chambers at various points in the last decade, but never both during the same sessions. Never made it to the governor's desk. And so we've taken it forward. We've taken what I believe are the best of all of the ideas out there, tried to combine them into a single bill. We've got bipartisan support on it, so that is very good news. I'm pleased about that and am hopeful and cautiously optimistic we'll be able to move it forward this session.
I go with Senator Shelley Short, Representatives Andrew I almost did the same thing we were talking about earlier. Andrew Engel and Hunter A. Bell, the representatives we were talking about, they came in at the same time. They were both elected the same year, so they came in together. So sometimes people combine the two of them or get them mixed up. So anyway, it's Representative Andrew Engel and Hunter A. Bell, and Senator Shelley Short, on Okanagan Country Radio. Again, if you want to ask a question, you can just email me directly, tracy.ellis, T-R-A-C-Y.E-L-L-I-S, at leg.wa.gov, or call 509-826-0100. Well, one thing everybody in Olympia has been talking about is an income tax. Our state currently does not have an income tax. Actually, the income tax is illegal. It was found to be unconstitutional, and then a couple of years ago, there was an initiative that basically banned an income tax. So why is everybody talking about, including the governor who's endorsed this idea, why is everybody talking about an income tax all of a sudden? Senator Shore, why don't we start with you?
Well, I would say because obviously Olympia never has enough money, to spend. This is something that has been voted down either 10 or 11 times in years past, and just simply not that long ago, was voted, and it was taken from an was that an initiative? Boy, I love Monday mornings first thing session. There was a vote on it, and the majority leader in the Senate has called it a pie crust promise, easily made, easily broken, which just is stunning to me. But the way it came actually is an initiative to the legislature, and when initiatives to the legislature are voted on, they can be changed by simple majority, and I think that's the key. If it's an initiative to the people, then that sits for 2 years. If they want to change it within that time period, then it has to be two-thirds. I think it's two-thirds.
Yes, two-thirds. Yes.
Yeah. So anyway, it's just a bad deal. I just find it offensive. It doesn't mean we're taking what we do very seriously when someone says something's easily made, easily broken. I think that really disenfranchises so many Washingtonians.
And Tracy, I know there's a constitutional piece to this too. So as you said, for almost 100 years now, our state Supreme Court has said that our state constitution prohibits an income tax. So that's clear. That's been repeated in case after case after case. And so now we've got a lot of discussion about an income tax right now. And I thought it was really interesting. The governor appears to be talking about trying to introduce a constitutional amendment, which is rightfully difficult, but the legislative leaders appear to be talking about trying to do it via statute, with really the hope that our state Supreme Court will just have a change of opinion about what our state constitution means. And I just think that is completely destructive to public trust in the process. If you've got longstanding precedent under our state constitution and they want to change that, then I think they need to go through the difficult process of amending our state constitution, because I don't believe the people of Washington want an income tax. I think they would reject it if given the opportunity to do so through the constitutional amendment process.
One thing that has been talked about a little bit is that if they do pass a bill enacting an income tax, I mean, obviously, as you said, it's going to be challenged no matter what in court. Also, the governor says he hopes that it actually ends up in front of the voters. But one thing I learned, if they were to put an emergency clause on this, then now the voters could weigh in through initiative. That's more difficult, and you're not voting on the actual bill that the legislature votes on. But with an emergency clause, that actually means it can't go to a referendum, and the voters don't get a chance to weigh in, pretty much right away on that if they want. You still have to get signatures and everything like that. But the difference is actually pretty important, and people may not understand this. If the governor is saying that he wants voters to be able to have a chance to weigh in on this, it would probably be inappropriate, don't you think, is it inappropriate to have an emergency clause in a bill like that?
I mean, I certainly think so, yeah. I mean, if we take him at his word that he wants the voters to be able to weigh in on this, then yeah, I think they should be given the opportunity to do so. I also think you mentioned something really important, which is the timing of this, that even if the income tax somehow sailed through and there weren't lengthy delays related to court challenges, which there should be if somehow this made it as a legislative process, it still won't collect any funds for years, right? For quite a long period of time. So that does not solve you know, the situation that we have as a result of our own overspending in Olympia over the course of the last decade. Instead, this is, you know, really part of a grand design from some folks on the far progressive left to try and do radical changes to our tax structure here in Washington.
And Representative Engel, I know another tax that concerns you always, because just the line of work that you do, is property taxes. There's also possibly, well, there is a proposal still alive from last session that would allow counties and cities to increase property taxes by a higher rate. Right now, they can only do it by 1% without a vote of the people. It would be, what the actual rate would be is, I guess, to be alive for 3%. But, you know, property taxes are one of those things that, I mean, I know a lot of people, it really can cause them a lot of pain. Well, where do you stand on that property tax increase potential?
Well, I strongly oppose it, and I think it's actually undemocratic, because the local governments can actually increase more than 1% right now, but they have to send it to the vote of their constituents. And so if it's voter approved, they can increase as much as they want to within the caps in the statute. And so what they want is the ability, some of them want, is the ability to raise taxes just by voting amongst the county commissioners or the city council and not asking their voters directly. And I believe this 1% cap is important to protect that. And tying it into the income tax, I think it's interesting. A couple of months ago, I had the opportunity to have breakfast with the governor one-on-one and have conversation. I had about a dozen topics that I wanted to cover, but he brought this income tax up and tried to sell me on his proposal, which was a little different than what we're hearing now. At that time, he was talking about, a millionaire tax, which is what he's still proposing. But he wanted a constitutional amendment, go to the people for a vote, and it would be locked in that it could never change below the $1 million income level, and it would be revenue neutral so that if it raised, say, $2 billion a year, they would reduce property tax or sales tax by that same amount. And the goal was to try to get at the regressive nature of Washington's tax system, where lower-income people pay a higher percentage of their income to taxes than upper-income people. And I told them I don't support it. I told them that I believe the majority of people in the Washington state as a whole oppose an income tax and an even higher percentage in my district. And I told him that we also probably wouldn't trust him not to raise the property and sales tax back up again. And so, but it was interesting that now the proposal isn't even talking about lowering other taxes, it's just about raising more revenue.
Right. It might be you might be willing to have a discussion. They're talking about getting rid of the sales tax and the property tax, but, you know, that's not the proposal.
And I still think, I think there could be a case made for that, but it would definitely have to be a voter decided thing. This is not something that we as a legislature should impose on the people.
You represent several counties in your district, and each one of those counties has a sheriff. The sheriffs are elected. Is that system, I mean, you know, I guess, because there's a bill, isn't there a bill that would make sheriffs appointed? I didn't know whether there was a problem with electing sheriffs, but I mean, if there is this something that you support, appointing sheriffs instead of having them be elected? Is that what the bill would do?
Well, I'll dive in here. So, first of all, I don't think there's a problem with the process by which we elect our sheriffs. There are some folks who believe that there need to be revisions made to the process by which someone is deemed eligible to serve in the position of county sheriff. So, by way of background, the duties and the eligibility for county sheriff is outlined in our state constitution, and the sheriff is the ultimate conservator of public safety within the county. So it's a really important position. It's vitally important. Our large rural counties out in the 7th District. There was from my perspective, a really bad bill that we saw last session. This is House Bill 1399. And, through some really, what I view as extremely, long-term, strategic, hard-fought efforts by Republicans of both chambers, we were able to defeat that bill last session. But bad ideas keep turning up in Olympia. And so what this bill would do is that it would restrict who can run for the position of sheriff or serve in the position of sheriff through a state entity called the Criminal Justice Training Commission, the CJTC. And the effect is that less people would be eligible to run for sheriff. There would be more state involvement in deciding who can and cannot run for sheriff. And I think that's a bad result for the people of certain people of Eastern Washington. I think the people of Washington writ large, and I think the very strong bipartisan opposition to this bill from sheriffs across the state is proof of that.
Senator Shore, I know you're concerned about a bill out there that involves egg workers and could hit the agricultural community pretty hard in your area. Talk about that.
Well, this is a bill that, as I was going through the bills that were pre-filed and getting ready for the first day of session, this is one that was just introduced a couple of days ago, and it would allow agricultural workers to collectively bargain. And, you know, the guise of it is to protect, you know, immigrant workers. And we know that these employees are very important for our agricultural, just agriculture in general. You look at all of the things over the years and how hard, it has become for agricultural, just our farmers to be able to do what they do. And I think the best example of that is one that would prevent, agricultural workers from having overtime and how split the agricultural worker community was over that. Many view the job and want the overtime. It's money they send back to their families. And so it's a bit ironic that Olympia says, oh, but we know better than you. You know, we want to protect you from yourself. And I use that as an example because this continues to just elevate what Olympia sees. And when you look at the state of Washington, agriculture is a huge part of our economy. It's a huge part in our district, tremendous economy. And I don't see how a farmer could actually do what they do. Harvest their products, get them to market, get them overseas. We have a huge export market, and continue to do business. I think, to be honest, this bill, should it survive, would be the death knell of agriculture that we know today, and would just be hugely, hugely devastating in our district and really in the state of Washington.
Agriculture is one of those issues that sometimes people in the USA may not think about much at all. Your district is interesting because it has various different kinds of agriculture too, right? I mean, from ranching to, regular farms, right? Growing stuff.
Yep. You have your orchards.
Yeah, orchards as well, right?
So, huge.
Maybe this is a chance to, even people who live in the district may not know what the 7th district is. First off, it's huge. I believe geographically, it's one of the largest, if not the largest, district, isn't it?
So this is one of my favorite statistics to throw out. So it's larger than 9 U.S. states. It's right sandwiched in size between Maryland and West Virginia in terms of size. It's all or part of 7 counties. It's absolutely huge. I know one of the giant jobs that the 3 of us have in Olympia is just educating our counterparts about the impact of the proposed legislation on a big rural area like the 7th district.
It is very rural, too. I mean, the biggest city in the district. Well, yeah, the biggest city is
Eastwenatchee.
Yeah, that's right. Yep.
Eastwenatchee
is in that district, too.
Well, and just to go back to the issue, too, we've heard this, over time consistently. Olympia, I think, thinks that just the folks that are, that have our agricultural crops and need workers to harvest them, that they don't care about them. And that is so far from the truth. It just amazes me to the lengths that our folks go to protect the workers, to make sure that they have what they need, and Olympia keeps messing with it. And it's just, it's not right. Again, I just think it's very onerous, should this bill become law.
We have much more to talk about. We'll kind of explain to you the length of the legislative session, how it works, and a lot more when we come back on Live from Olympia. Once again, if you have questions, you can email me, tracy.ellis@leg.wa.gov. That's tracy.ellis@leg.wa.gov. Or call 509-826-0100. This is Okanagan Country Radio. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Live from Olympia with 7th Legislative District State Senator Shelley Short and Representatives Andrew Engel and Hunter A. Bell on Okanagan Country Radio. I'm your host, Tracy Ellis, with the Washington State Senate Republican Caucus. You can email me with your questions, Tracy, T-R-A-C-Y dot Ellis, E-L-L-I-S, at leg.wa.gov, or call 509-826-0100. So the legislative session, the 2026 legislative session, starts today. This is what we call a short session or a 60-day session. Senator Short, why don't you explain how the session works?
Sure. Well, obviously, when it starts, the bills get introduced into the session and they're referred to committees for their consideration. And there are dates throughout session that in order for bills to stay alive and hopefully get to the governor's desk, or hopefully not, depending on which ones they are, there are a number of deadlines. And so the first deadline for House bills and for Senate bills in each of our chambers, in a 60-day session is 3 weeks. So from the time the gavel bangs down today, for bills to stay alive, they need to be acted on in committee within that three-week timeline, which is very, very quick.
Mm-hmm. You're the floor leader, which is, for people to understand, it can be a very stressful position. Why don't you explain a little bit what you do as floor leader?
Gosh, I call it three-dimensional chess because, what you think going on often changes. My role is to communicate with the majority floor leader to make sure that our caucus understands what's going on the floor and the movement of the floor. It's also about really helping to craft debate and honestly running amendments on subjects I may not be completely clear on, but they need, they need our help. That's when talking points really help. But it really is a part of that, developing the team strategy of what we do on the floor, whether bills we are for or those bills that we are definitely against. And it is such an honor. I feel like the position really helps our district. I know I am in conversations I would not otherwise be, where we can help advance either issues we have or issues my House seatmates have, and really, really making sure to the extent that I can that it's beneficial for the district. It is indeed an honor to be chosen by your caucus to lead that, and so it's going to be an interesting session.
Yeah, and if I can just chime in there briefly, Andrew and I have talked about this before, about what a benefit it is for the district that Senator Short serves the leadership there in the Senate for about 15 different reasons. But one of them is, of course, Andrew and I are brand new. This is our first year. We're still figuring out the process. And so it's wonderful for our bills to have somebody in leadership over on the Senate side advocating for them, but really just as a cheerleader for the district writ large, it's really invaluable that Senator Short serves in the position that she does.
In case you hadn't guessed it, we should also let you know that all three legislators are Republicans, and the makeup of the Washington State Legislature, Democrats are in the majority in both the House and the Senate. Democrats occupy all the elected offices, and including governor and lieutenant governor. So sometimes there are it can be challenging for, I think, Republicans at times, and frustrating, because when you're in the minority, you kind of have to, it's the majority who makes the calls of what bills get heard and all that. So I'm sure that can be frustrating at times, right?
Well, and the interesting thing of, you know, when bills start in their own chambers, and then obviously the bills have to continue in the opposite chamber, you know, throughout session in order to have a chance at a governor's signature. You know, a bill that passes in our chamber, like, may not be something that is accepted at all in the House. And so it's just, you are at their mercy. I mean, I hate to say it, but that's exactly the way it is. You need to work hard, not only to stand up for the things that you don't like, but it's also important to build the relationships, to have that chance, you know, to maybe get things across to the governor that wouldn't otherwise, because you work really hard on those bipartisan relationships. And that's a part of something that all three of us do. And I'm really proud about that. And I think our district has benefited because of that work.
We have a question from a listener. There was a bill for property tax relief for senior citizens. One thing we should let people know, we don't have all the bills in front of us. There are hundreds, hundreds and hundreds of them. But wondering if you guys know if there's any update on that bill for tax relief for senior citizens.
Well, I'll chime in. I serve on, as we mentioned before, the Finance Committee over on the House side. I have not seen any movement as far as tax relief for the people of Washington at all in the time that I've been in the legislature. I know there's been some discussion about various forms of targeted forms of tax relief, but I have not seen those proposals get any traction. Instead, what we are seeing, a pedal-to-the-metal approach by the other side, is efforts to raise taxes. We saw that last session where we had you know, historic tax increases, over $9 billion in tax increases last session. And so I have not seen any meaningful indications that the other side is going to turn around or take a different approach on taxes.
That leads me to a Seattle Times editorial that came out. So it says, the Times editorial board has said this many times before and will say it again. Lawmakers have made their own troubles by repeatedly ignoring the state's own economist forecast and continuously outspending tax revenues. There's no amount of increased taxes that seem to satisfy the Democratic majority. Even as revenues rise, it's never enough. The bottom line for lawmakers cannot be to thrust even more financial hardships on the backs of Washingtonians. Enough is enough, says the Seattle Times editorial board. Not a board that's known for being particularly conservative, but I mean, I've heard a lot of Republicans who basically echo that.
Yeah, I was just going to say, that's not a House Republican talking point. That's the Seattle Times. I mean, right. It's really an indication, I think, of how far outside the mainstream, you know, the majorities in both chambers are here in Olympia. And it's extremely concerning from my perspective.
Go ahead, Sandra.
We go on. Hold on. This is what cell phones are handy for. So there is a bill that is pre-filed this session, Senate Bill 5020, that would provide property tax relief to senior citizens. And we don't have a summary of the bill yet. Hold on here. Just a second. We may have to get back to you, but there has been a bill introduced. And it would be that real property owned by persons over the 75 years of age or older would be exempt from state and local property tax, regardless of combined household income.
All right,
so that's in a nutshell.
Well, we'll keep an eye on it for you. Now that we have a listener out there who is interested in that bill, we'll keep an eye on it for you.
Well, and we'll see if the bill gets any traction.
Bills, and more bills. I mean, you know, this is also the time of year where it's like the start of a baseball season for the Mariners. You know, there's hope. Now the Mariners are much better this year, but there's always hope at the beginning of the season. You start off in first place, also start off in last place. But so, I mean, right now there's hope that all your bills that you're sponsoring, obviously you're all hoping that, yeah, we sponsor these bills and we're going to get these things across the finish line. What are some of the bills that you are passionate about beyond what we've already talked about this year?
Well, I've got a couple of healthcare bills. I've pre-filed three so far. I got a couple more that I'll probably drop, but the three I filed so far, all you spoke about bipartisanship earlier, all have a Democrat co-sponsor, which I think helps their odds. But two healthcare bills, one of them has to do with rural hospitals. And for more than 20 years, we've allowed advanced registered nurse practitioners and physician's assistants to operate the same as medical doctors to run emergency department shifts. And this year, a lawyer found that
Oh, those lawyers.
Oh, I know. You really got to watch out for them.
Appreciate that. Yeah.
He's a good lawyer.
Yeah, right.
Thanks, Tracy.
There is differences.
Yeah.
But the lawyer found in the law that ARMPs and PAs should not be allowed to supervise radiological technicians when they're doing CT scans with IV contrast. A little bit complicated, but it's an important procedure when someone comes into the emergency department with a stroke. And so they said you have to have a physician on site in order to do that procedure, which effectively means we're no longer allowed to use ARMPs and PAs in emergency departments on their own, which could dramatically increase costs. And this is a very safe procedure. I used to be an EMT. I could actually safely deal with the problems that come from these procedures. So I've got a constituent who works at the Othello Hospital, lives in my district, called me one day and explained this situation and wrote a bill, and it's been quite a ride. I mean, I've had hundreds of conversations about this bill. Originally, the Radiological Association and the Medical Association, the CRNAs and the nurses all had differences of opinion. And I think right now they're all on the same page, but, fingers crossed, we'll see what happens with that. But that bill is getting a hearing tomorrow in the Healthcare and Wellness Committee, so I'm excited about that. And then I've also got a charity care bill. So Washington has the most generous charity care laws in America. If you're under 300% of federal poverty, which for my family, I've got four kids, it would be $126,000 a year, means you don't have to pay anything if you go to the hospital. Well, obviously that creates a burden on the hospital. It transfers cost to other people. But 2 years ago, the Department of Health eliminated the geographical boundaries portion of this policy, which means that people from anywhere in the world can now come to Washington State and get a hip replaced or other procedures at no cost if they're under 300% of the U.S. federal poverty level. Well, particularly, so far most of the world hasn't found this out, fortunately, because this could be a crisis.
Until this radio program.
Yes. All right. Don't tell your international friends. But we have the Idaho border right next to our district, and the Newport Hospital has seen a huge influx in the last 2 years of Idaho residents coming over and taking advantage of their hospital to get free procedures, which puts a real burden on a currently struggling hospital. So I got a bill to address that. And Senator Short has the companion to it. So hopefully we can get some movement to say, if you're traveling from some other country, you would still apply if you have an emergency, but you can't schedule a hip surgery. If you're a Canadian, you can get free hip surgeries up there, but you often have to wait a couple years. A lot of the wealthier Canadians come to the United States, so they don't have to wait as long. We don't want them to figure out that the poorer ones can also come to the United States and just get it paid for by Washington State residents.
Right. Sometimes we say things like, you get this free health care. Ain't nothing free, right? I mean, it's just the hospitals have to pay for that.
Somebody's
paying for it. So, it affects, insurance rates, everything else, right? So, yeah.
Well, and with our hospitals, so many of them are critical access hospitals that do have a different formula for reimbursement. But again, Olympia has made it a lot more difficult for them to operate in a manner that keeps our hospitals in our communities and accessible when they're needed. So it'll be interesting. I'm happy to help Andrew. He's done a ton of work on this. Introduce the Senate companion to give it kind of twice the chance and strategically make sure that one vehicle or another, gets through to the governor's desk. But he has done a ton of work on this, and I'm so appreciative of that.
This is Live from Olympia on Okanagan Country Radio with State Senator Shelley Short, Representatives Andrew Engel and Hunter A. Bell. Email your questions to Tracy, T-R-A-C-Y, .ellis, leg.wa.gov, leg.wa.gov, or call 509-826-0100. What other bills are you working on, Representative A. Bell?
Yeah, I've got a number of bills. Actually, a surprisingly large number of bills for me this session. I anticipated coming in with, maybe a few, and I've got about seven at this point. And so that can be a challenge. It's a blessing and a curse. It's a blessing because, of course, it gives you a chance to articulate the values of our district and more opportunities to play offense to get these bills onto the governor's desk. It can be a little bit of a challenge because, of course, you've got to push for all these individual bills. But I've got some bills I'm very proud of. Some are very district specific. I already talked about the family burial ground bill. We've got a wolf bill. I had to smile the other day. I saw a print somewhere that it's not session if you don't see a wolf bill out of the 7th Legislative District. And My eyes mistook it for a moment. I thought it said a golf bill, a golf bill. I said, do you even know our district? Are you familiar with our district?
I said that when I started logging for golf. What's the winner here? Sorry.
Yeah, so I've got a wolf bill that I'm proud of that would link the actions that our State Department of Fish and Wildlife are directed to take under already existing management plans with the population of our ungulates that are out there. So think elk, white-tailed deer, that sort of thing. And really the goal is appropriate management of both of these animals, these examples of wildlife. That's a bill. It's House Bill 2221. I also have a bill that addresses a concern that I've had for some time. I'm concerned that something is wrong with religious liberty here in the state of Washington. And I think there are any number of examples. We've got the individual that they called the praying coach. This is Coach Joe Kennedy out of Bremerton High School, who engaged in voluntary prayer sessions with high school football players. They could participate or not if they wanted to during a game or after a game. And he was fired for that. And he had to go clear to the U.S. Supreme Court to obtain any sort of relief. You know, the COVID pandemic continues to cast a very long shadow. We had the churches closed while the casinos were open. We had lack of real religious exemptions from the mandate. That's a real concern. We had the riot in Seattle within the last year where a group of Christians were engaged in peaceful acts of worship and Antifa disruptors showed up and the mayor blamed the Christians. And then we also had the example just this last session where the legislature passed a bill that would require Catholic clergy to disclose what was revealed in confession to law enforcement. And we argued and pointed out that, of course, we all want to protect children. That's vitally important, but there are ways to do it that don't violate the Constitution. The majority said, thanks, but no thanks. We're going to go ahead and do it anyway. And it took a federal judge about 10 minutes to enjoin that. And our state attorney general, who is in the other party, refused to defend the law. That's how patently unconstitutional it was. So there's something clearly wrong with religious liberty in this state. So I proposed a bill, it's House Bill 2342, that would establish a religious liberty commission whose task is to advise the governor, the legislature, the public, and local governments about issues related to the free exercise of religion here in the state of Washington. My hope is to avoid some of those situations I just described. And then another bill that I'm excited about, doesn't have a bill number yet, but this has been a late-breaking development. But something I'm very passionate about, of course, is our veteran population. We have a huge veteran population in eastern Washington. Well, a few years ago, before Andrew and I arrived in the legislature, and Senator Short may remember this, the legislature authorized as a discretionary matter the building of a memorial to those who lost their lives in the global war on terror here at the Capitol campus. And by the way, for those who haven't visited the Capitol campus, it is so beautiful. Yeah. Please do come out during sessions. Senator Short and Andrew and I will all be thrilled to see you. It really is a lovely Capitol campus, but we've got memorials to those who lost their lives in Korea and Vietnam and World War II. And this was an effort to do the same for those who lost their lives in Afghanistan and Iraq. But the bill that was passed made the building of the memorial a discretionary matter and appropriated no funds toward it. So I've got a bill that would say we will build the memorial, and then a separate request for some amount of funds that would match the private funds that have already been raised. So the idea is that both the private sector and our state government would have some skin in the game in building this memorial to honor those who laid down their lives in Afghanistan and Iraq.
You know, you were mentioning the religious liberty bill. There's also been a lot of talk about bills related to this, too, to anti-Semitism in, you know, on college campuses is one thing that, you know, I know is a concern of the Senate Republican leader, Senator John Braun. We've talked about that several times. And that's just another, I guess, another example of, you know, religious people. I mean, it makes it sound like almost you're saying that they almost feel like they're under attack in a sense. I don't. Does it feel that way?
Yeah, I think that's 100%. Fair. Yeah, I think that's absolutely fair. I mean, there is real concern about anti-Semitism on our college campuses. I think there has been appropriately an effort to shine the spotlight on that. You know, we have Jewish students that are in fear for their physical safety, you know, at various institutions throughout the nation. So that is a real concern. But really, the thrust of my bill is that people of faith feel under attack here in Washington. And we have advisory and education commissions that exist on a variety of subjects. But this is an effort to create one that deals with one of our first freedoms, the right to worship.
Sometimes people, when they think of separation of church and state, they just think of keeping church out of state. You know, it also applies the other way around, right?
Yes, it does.
Completing state out of church. Senator Short, what bills do you have that you want to highlight?
Well, there, first of all, there's one that's very bipartisan, and I frankly don't care who gets across the finish line. That's restoring the wildfire funding that the legislature did not fully fund. We call it, we coined it the 1168 bill. That was just the bill that gives DNR the ability to pre-position assets, to have the assets that we need to fight fire, to have the coordination and also do important forest health work. So we are actually, this is prevention versus just reaction. And so I know Representative Springer has a bill, I believe, too. I don't care who gets across the finish line. We just need to continue that important work. In the age of folks having trouble with their homeowners insurance, either getting outright canceled or exorbitant fee increases, the state needs to do its part, too. So we'll see how that goes. I have a bill hearing this week on a bill that came from a constituent school district, and they are rebuilding their school buildings. They're super excited, very old school, excited to do the work. And the state's mandates of what kind of HVAC systems you can use or heating and cooling systems that you can use come into play for a school district that is very near the Canadian border. They are in a very cold zone, if you will, and they are being mandated to either systems that won't fully work in their environment or the expense of it. And then the maintenance, you know, where do you go for maintenance of these very complex systems? So what my bill would do would simply allow an exemption, a narrow targeted exemption. Hopefully we have the right bill language. We're doing it based on school population. I have heard from others that maybe we need to tweak that some. I do know there are some concerns, you know, on whether or not this bill is really getting rid of the mandate. While I would like to do that, I would really like schools to be able to determine what systems work best for them, this bill does not do that. So I'm super excited. It has a hearing. Again, came from the Selkirk School District from their superintendent, and I'm just super excited to see if we can get that bill through.
So this question, I think we'll tackle this once, and you know, it's not something we could talk about a lot, but it, the listener says the West Side is mostly Democrats and the other side mostly Republicans. Can't we just split this in half and let Democrats run their side on the coast and let the Republicans run their side on the east? I mean, I guess it's not an easy process. First off, we should make that clear. I guess what are your thoughts on the divide? You know, it is interesting. I don't know if other states have this. I guess Oregon kind of does the same thing. But, I mean, the West is definitely, you know, one side, and the East is definitely another. It's kind of interesting. It's something you have to deal with all the time.
Yeah, Tracy, so that's exactly the right analysis. So, you know, the West Side of the state's largely but not exclusively Democrat, a lot of independents, you know, a lot of Republicans over there as well. The East Side of the state, largely but not exclusively Republican, you know, independents, moderates, Democrats over in Eastern Washington as well. You know, part of our challenge is to represent everybody in our district and, again, to advocate for our district, acknowledging that the Democrats, you know, currently have majorities in both chambers. You know, but with that, this idea of having a separate state or some sort of a setup where Eastern Washington would have more authority over its own affairs is an idea that's long had traction and support, particularly in Eastern Washington. So one of your predecessors a number of decades ago, Senator Morton, advocated for Eastern Washington to be a separate state. More recently, there's a newer iteration of this idea, and Representative Rob Chase from Spokane has taken the lead on this, and he's introduced a bill. It's House Bill 2085. He calls it Win-Win for Washington, and what it does is that it creates broad autonomy for Eastern Washington on a number of different areas. And, I actually did an informational session with Representative Chase. I'm one of the co-sponsors, as is Representative Engel in the House on this bill. But to me, I think there's a lot of common sense attached to it, that Eastern Washington is sufficiently different, particularly in terms of economy and land use issues, and natural resource issues, that we should have some autonomy in how we go about addressing those issues. So, I don't know. Representative Chase would probably have a better idea about the long-term, prospects for the bill. But here's one thing I will say, is that this bill is important for us to continue talking about how unique and different the needs are of Eastern Washington. So I was proud to support it.
Well, and his idea too is it wouldn't split the state per se, so it wouldn't be like adding a 51st state, which would take congressional, right, approval to do that. But our jobs are to work where we can with our Democratic colleagues. There are times we can, a lot of times we can't, but by and large, there are folks on the West Side that say, hey, we want to be with you because our ideas don't match their ideas. And a lot of them, frankly, come from about a 50-mile radius from the Space Needle. And so it's, you have their idea, which is government needs to do everything it needs to fund everything, it needs to regulate everything, and then you come into communities like ours in Eastern Washington and some in Western Washington where it's like, hey, independence, your ability to find your way and to work hard and to really, I always call it pack your own freight, is what we want and how we have survived, and it's such a polar difference. And I think that bill highlights it.
We should make clear, while the three here are Republicans, they do represent the entire district. So if you're a Democrat, do not hesitate to come to them. They will listen to your problem just like they listen to anybody else's problems.
Absolutely. I mean, really good ideas come from our constituents of all varieties. And, our job is to look for, and help them any way we can, help their voice be heard, work with our Democratic colleagues, again, where we can. I feel I've been successful because I've reached across the aisle and worked really hard to establish relationships on issues where we can work together and really not care who gets the credit. So excited to continue the work. It's an honor.
That's Senator Shelley Short, along with Representatives Andrew Engel and Hunter A. Bell. This is Okanagan Country Radio. I'm Trace Yells with the Washington State Senate Republican Caucus. Have a great day.